celebrating success, learning from legends, and growing poppies. This is Tall Poppy Talk with Grace Lewis. Kia ora and welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. Today, you can hear it in my voice. I'm so excited. We have Maite Natalio. She is an artist, a performer, and a choreographer, having toured with world best dance companies, pop stars, and having built a career lined with credits from Broadway to film to TV to off-Broadway theater and more. You are a New York City-based woman on a mission to make an impact on the world, and Maite is doing just that. As a Broadway choreographer, she is currently working with Suf's musical, and it ended, but it's going to launch again in the spring in London, the How to Dance in Ohio musical, so lots of moving parts there. And you also attended the 2024 Tony Awards in your capacity with Suf's this year, which chills. Maite makes time to advocate and support others. She will be hosting her own Move Us Forward Dancers for Harris class, so a special masterclass for dancers on September 29th in New York City. So this is a bit of a call to action, people. Like, register if you're local, get there and experience what it is to be in her presence and in her class. It's a part of the series of masterclasses to support the Harris Waltz campaign. You're a dancer, you're an actor, choreographer, performer, and today you're a guest on Tall Poppy Talk, so it's such a gift. My first question is, where and how are you today?
I am in my home in Harlem, New York, and I'm a little calm today. I've had a bit of a anxious week, getting a lot of things done, but today I feel like I've accomplished a couple of those things.
Okay, I love that. I'm here for it. Kind of on that, because something that's really relevant to the podcast is with high performers, how we do control that sense of calmness. So for you, is it just getting things done calms you down, or do you have a bit more of a tip or an advice of how you do that for yourself?
I'm not great at it. I'll admit that. I think, yes, getting things done, it's hard for me because I much prefer to be in the studio and working on the thing. But what they don't tell you, or what you realize, there's so much prep work before you get to the studio, so much. And then when you're in between projects, you're, writing out proposals or taking meetings or, updating things or getting, there's so much other things that you have to do. And that's the stuff that I'm not great at, that I would much rather procrastinate and push aside, because I much rather just do the work, do the art, be an artist. But part of that is also the other side, which is for me always a little bit of a struggle. I really have to rev myself up to do it, but I have been a little bit more aggressive in my approach. You have to get it done. You have to get it done. It's we all have our obstacles, and that's one for me. So yeah, I think it's a combination. If I don't get those things done, then I have this anxiety of it looming. Right. And then I'm what else can I do? Looking for things to not do. But then once I get it done, there's also the anxiety of okay, now I'm waiting for what I got done to come to fruition. So, I find moments to really put things in perspective when I get to these heightened, anxious moments. It's just okay, breathe, settle. Maybe you need to take a break from it, walk away, and things like that.
Thank you. And that's so real. So I appreciate that too. Sometimes you'll start cleaning the kitchen and you're this is not what I have to do. And
yeah,
in your field industry, unlike sometimes these endurance athletes I have on, right, where even if they're not feeling it, as long as they get the training in, it's beneficial. Yeah. For you, if you're not, and I say feeling it with quotation marks, because it's a flow state, you have to get in this creative place. You cannot flick that off and on. There's so much that builds into it. So I appreciate that element as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't, it's funny, to be a creator. I mean, it's all a practice. I mean, it is a practice. It is, I still have to do things to be in my body, whether I'm performing or not. Right. I still have to physically be in tune with my body. I love yoga. I love, I'll take class or I go to the gym, but there is the physical element. But the hardest part is the mental element of being a creative and having to generate on the spot. And so my thing is constantly trying to see things, right? Like I try to see as much art as possible, not just dance, but see all of it, just to like constantly be inspired and understand, like just be reminded that there's other ways and other approaches to tackle things, that maybe if my approach to enter some choreography or some storytelling doesn't work, I could think of a piece of art that I saw or a movie that I saw or something else that I saw and maybe use that to spark the inspiration. I think real life, I think it's important to live life and like aside, get out, you know, I'm not a person that just eat, breathes and lives what I do. I think it's important to travel and like to spend time with family and friends and just like experience the world. I think that really also inspires me and gives me inspiration. So I think for me, like the scary thing is like not having that click, that inspiration once I'm giving a task, you know, and that does happen, you know, it does happen. And I've gotten to studio and I'll try something and it gets to a point where I'm like, that's all I have for today. You know, like we'll start back tomorrow, but I don't have, that's all that I feel. And I don't believe in like, just grinding it out if I know that I don't have it. I think like rigor and hard work is necessary in everything, but there also comes a point, and most creators will understand, where you just like the well feels a little bit low and you might just need to pause and come back to it.
And what you said there about the like hard work and the grind essentially too is so perfect for this like first question I had. And Suf's musical, I don't know, I'm in marketing, so I call it a tagline, but I like loved when I saw it, if there isn't a trail, blaze one.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is just everything you were just saying there. And so to step back for a moment, could you share like your journey from maybe the first time you performed or the first time you felt that oomph to where you are now, like choreographing Suf's musical?
Yeah. So I started out as a dancer. I'm born and raised in New York, and I went to a performing arts high school, went to college, I went to a conservatory for dance, and the mission was always to be a performer, right? So I went to a conservatory, as soon as I got out, joined a dance company, did a lot of performing, really loved bouncing around genres, right? From concert dance and dance companies to pop stars to immersive downtown experimental theater. So I really knew that my interests were always like bouncing around. And for a while I was like, is this like I thought, or sometimes I was made to feel like I needed to stick to one thing. And I'm really glad that I did bounce around, because I feel like that has added to the versatility of my creativity and also as my artistry. But then as a performer, I was always interested in process and how things were made, and always like, while even as a performer in the studio, always paying attention to like the directors and choreographers, not just to what they were telling me to do, but like the choices and how they were getting from A to B. Always was good at like a little bit of troubleshooting, anticipating a problem or helping a choreographer when I felt they were like kind of stuck, or like, what if we do this? And that kind, I think that I didn't know what that meant at first, but I think that other people started seeing it in me, and choreographers that I worked with were like, do you want to assist me with this? Do you want to do this? And it kind of like just started some wheels turning. I studied composition in college, and most people that go to conservatories do. And I remember my comp teacher was trying to push me towards that very early on. I was like obsessed with dance, and I was like, I just want to be on stage. But also I knew so many amazing choreographers, still do. And I felt like, I don't really want to jump into this if I don't feel like I have something to say. Like I don't think it's necessary. I feel like there's enough people, and until I feel like I have a unique voice or I'm adding something to this or have something to say, I'm good. As I started getting into more rooms as in the creative capacity, as an assistant, as an associate, you start getting that thought of like, what if I had the chance to do this, what would I do? And I think that that's kind of a thing where creatives know, like, okay, when you start thinking about what you would do in that situation, it kind of means that you want that opportunity to try that. You know, you might fail or succeed, but it's, you have to just do that. So I remember I saw this documentary on the Central Park Five, which was a case that happened in New York with these five young men were wrongfully convicted of a crime. And I saw the documentary, and I remember that case from when I was younger in New York. And I just remember the time, and I'm like, wow, young boys, and the energy behind it, and like the arc of the story of them then being exonerated. I was like, this is like such a story, right? So I was like, I kind of want to do a dance piece about this. And I remember the music of the time. And then a friend of mine, Jen Jankisha, had this dance showcase called BCB. And she asked me to choreograph. And I was like, actually, I was super scared. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I like wrote text for it. I curated and sourced all the music. Thank God my brother's a sound designer and can always edit music for me last minute. He hates that. And then I choreographed this like 7-minute piece. I did it at the showcase. It got really a good response from the audience, but also my agent was there. Camila Brown's agent was there, who I also was associate for a while. And they were really encouraging. They were like, wow, like there's something there. Like you actually know how to story tell. And from there, it kind of just like snowballed. Like people started reaching out a little bit more to me. I started getting more opportunities for choreography. And so at that time, I had to make a choice to kind of pull back on performing. I'm still performing. I did a musical last year, but not as much. I think that choreography is taking the most of my time, and I'm not done performing, but I just think it needs to be more specific and really something that I'm passionate about. But from there, and you know, it's like you get smaller opportunities and you start getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then you land your first Broadway show. My first Broadway show was actually How to Dance in Ohio. But it's the same season and the same season as Suffs, which is like a lot for my first season. My debut season to do 2 Broadway shows, which is really was a lot of work. But I love both. They were both really different. And most importantly, they're both about subject matters that I deeply care about. And that's also something that I realized as an artist that I'm drawn to. You know, I'm drawn to stories that make you look at humanity and a little bit differently, that shines a light on maybe a subject matter or on people that we didn't know, that educates people. So those are the kind of stories that I'm really into. Like, of course, like, I'm sure I love like sci-fi, and I'm sure one day I'll find like the right project that feels like fantastical and, you know, but I also feel like what I'm drawn to and what I've been given opportunities for really speak to who I am. How to Dance in Ohio was the first musical to cast autistic performers to play autistic individuals, which was incredible. And I think it was, you know, while it was a short-lived musical, I think it was a game changer. And I think it showed the industry was possible. We had an accessibility team, which I had never experienced before. And then you have Suffs, which is such a relevant and timely musical, which discusses the plight of women in America getting their right to vote. It's also honest about the fact that when women did get the right to vote, it was not all women, only white women. And like Black women and women of color and immigrants had to wait to get that right. So to me, it was a no-brainer. It was a show that I deeply, as a daughter of immigrants and my parents are Dominican, as a Black woman, like all of these topics felt relevant. I wanted to have a hand in telling the story. Shayna Taub, who wrote the music and composed it and also stars in it, is a genius in my eyes. And the music is so powerful and driving and has a pulse that feels like a movement. And then I was able to work with Lee Silverman, who I also admire and who I also think is an incredible director. Really strong and really imaginative and really precise. So to combine myself in this of all, and then I had our music director was Andrew Grody, right? A fierce a director, and the harmonies that she came up with also were inspiring for what I was choreographing. Like I would literally, it was like, what's this harmony line doing? What's this harmony line doing? So this combination of these amazing women to tell this story during this time in America where women's rights are being challenged in such a blatant and aggressive way. I have to do this. So that's how I landed there. That's how I landed in Suffs. And it's been an incredible journey. And I feel like I've gotten the opportunity to have this amazing, like, creative family because of the diverse world that I've been in the field. And I just hope it keeps getting more and more diverse.
Thank you. And too, when you mentioned with How to Dance in Ohio, there was like an accessibility team. There was people who were involved. And like you said, that was a new element to the creative process. And so with SAFS, because there is such a historical like element and there needs to be accuracy, are there people involved in the writing to like essentially fact check? Like, is that incorporated as well?
I mean, I think that's the right. I mean, yes, it was like a team effort. You know, when they first started at the Public Theater, and the Public Theater, like they were working with dramaturgs and, you know, and a lot of research went into the show. We all read books. Shayna read is now a suffrage expert. You know, you read the books about Ida B. Wells' autobiography, Mary Church Terrell, Alice Paul. So we read, there's a lot of research that goes to it. But the most important thing, and I think that what Shayna talks about and discovered toward our Broadway run, was that you have all these facts, but it also has to be entertaining and it has to be a musical. So it gets to a point where you have to then bring the creativity in and not make it a school lesson, because you could just Google and you could do all that. It's important with Broadway shows, and what, especially with SUFS, is that the first version had like way too many facts, too many dates. It was amazing. I loved it, but it had so much information that actually the audience could not digest it all. You know, what we did for the Broadway version was strip back so many facts and give you more heart. Like, who are these people as individuals? So you can connect with them on a personal level, get enough facts. But then my favorite part of the show is that you hear it in the audience every night. People even like, I have to look that up. I need to go Google that. I hear people saying it all the time. And if I'm in earshot, I'll respond. But they're like, you think that was true? Was this true? And I'm like, that was true. Yes, that was true. There were some embellishments, obviously, and like, you know, like chronological things that get shifted around as one does with any historical piece of art, because you also have to fit 100-something years in 2.5 hours, you know? And so I love that. And I learned a lot, you know. I learned, like, I'm like, okay, there's a problem with maybe giving too much fact, right? Too much, too many dates and too many numbers. And it's like, I can't retain all that. You start like glazing over. But when you care about somebody and like about, oh my gosh, I can't believe she went through that, then you want to know more about before and after.
Thank you. Yes. That's why I was curious, because like you're sparking that interest, or you're giving it the heart. I love that you use the word heart, because even in the way you make your choices and how you say your journey flows and you feel this, and then at one stage you're going to feel the pull towards doing more performing, so you'll go there. When you feel a pull towards something, because inherently, like in your soul and your heart, you are connected to it, then you're invested, then you're passionate, and the audience will leave wanting to know more. So exactly. I'm so grateful you gave that background context, because you want to do it justice. But like, yeah, there are books, there are lots of art, there's so much research you can do on your own. But the job of SAFS, the musical, the Broadway, is to make people leave and be almost like, how did I not know this? And I need to find out more. And my goodness, I'm inspired. So
yeah, I had friends come that were, I had one friend, I was like, I was a history major and I didn't know half of this. I was like, exactly. Which is a shame to the educational system that we don't know these, especially like, this is not a small thing. Like, this is something that allowed women the right to vote, you know, like half of this country, like to decide who leads this country. So it's just, it's funny what we don't know. And imagine if we knew this, maybe we would move differently. We would have thought differently. Maybe if young men knew this, they would treat some people differently. So I think it's one of the, if not the most important show on Broadway right now. And I'm not just saying that because I worked in it. I just feel like it is that important, especially given an election coming up.
Exactly. It is amplified, compounded, whatever you want to do to express how serious it is in this timeliness as well. Because, and what you had touched upon briefly is like, yeah, when the vote initially came, it was white woman of a certain like class, right? And then it expanded. And then there are people, like, I live in America, and that's, I don't get to vote, but I'm participating in society. So then that's a whole nother conversation that sparks when they leave Saf's musical, because people are like, oh wow, who else can't vote and what's going to happen? And it doesn't, I think too, what I want to like think about or talk about is like having the right to vote is so important. Do your research, and if you disagree with how someone else is voting, okay, that's their, that's what they get to do with their vote, but you get one.
You
and
get
speaking
one.
As someone who doesn't get one here,
but you still have to pay taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So
yeah,
man, just it's so powerful. And I agree, it's the, if not just one of many, but the most important message that's coming out right now, especially on Broadway. And like, you have grown up here, this is your home, you, but like, as someone from New Zealand, I'm like, everyone knows about Broadway. So the fact that you're choreographing this Broadway musical, just major kudos to you. Like I said, I was nervous to talk to you. I'm like, that's so high performing. It's elite.
Oh my goodness, thank you. It's a monster of a field, like in the best way and in the most challenging way. You know, it's hard to get in there. You know, there's so many great choreographers that came before me who I know who never got this opportunity. So I do not take it for granted. I really try to be present in the room when I'm in there. And there's so many things, you know, it's all about chemistry, about getting the right team. You know, it's important to have the right people leading in the room to get these stories in. And, you know, it's like, it's about collaboration. I love collaboration, but it's like, not every collaboration is perfect. But when you do get a collaboration that works, where you can all be honest and where you can just say how you feel, I think the audience can feel that. I think that the story benefits from when you feel like everybody had the same mission, that it wasn't like, I want to do it this way. I'm going to tell this story. We all have the same mission. And I feel that's very important with Suffs, especially because of the subject matter we were saying. Like, this is not a show where I was like, where I'm like, I need to make this dance number flashy for my work. I'm like, no. Is this dance number telling, pushing this story along? Because this story is important to be told. And we want people to listen, you know, and not be distracted, because the words are also important in this show.
And that's part of it too, which is why, and thank you for touching upon the collaboration element, to relate it back to sport, which I often do because I was a roller.
I love sport, so yes, let's go.
Oh, thank you. So you think about like in a boat, so in a rowing boat, typically like I row to the right side. There's a coxswain, they're the one yelling, doing, steering, all that important stuff. I cannot think about what they're doing. I trust them. We're in a team. And for us to all be collaborating together, it will actually detract from what I'm doing if I'm thinking about them. So in collaboration too, you have trust that, hey, they're actually the best for this because I can't do that job.
Yeah.
And if I'm thinking about it, it's taking away from what I need to do.
Yes, yes. It's like trust. I mean, trust is a very important word. And that's actually how the best collaborations happen, if you trust, you know, like if somebody's going to make a choice that I might not have made that choice, but I trust you, then you go with it, you know, and then communication, right? It's like trust and communication is what a collaboration is, because it's like, if you don't trust me, then I can't make my best choices. I can't take risks, and you're only going to make a great anything if you take a risk.
Oh, thank you. I want that to sit for a second. Like, You do need to take risks and trust and communication. We could say that to the cows come home. Communication and expectation as well. Expecting something from others and from yourself. And when you communicate about that, you don't have gaps between what you expected from someone and then what they came up with, because you've communicated. You
exactly.
know you know what's going on. Ah, I love it. Now, to shift gears slightly. So Tall Poppy Talk, for me, it was inspired by this idea of, in New Zealand, it's called tall poppy syndrome. So imagine like a poppy field, which is the community. And as people start to rise, we like chop them down. It's sort of like, let's come back to our own level. So that's when it externally happens. But then internally, as the poppy, you're like, I'm not going to grow because I'm going to get chopped down. So that's how we refer to it in Australia and New Zealand.
I love that expression. I've never heard that before, but I love it.
Well, it's so relevant and experienced everywhere in the US. But what inspired me to start the podcast was, I was like, there are so many high performers, aka tall poppies, out there who undoubtedly have experienced it, but they persisted anyway, right? For whatever their motivation was. So the question for you, please, as a tall poppy, is either the tall poppy syndrome or imposter syndrome, which might be a more familiar term. How, firstly, would you describe it? And then how have you experienced it?
I mean, yes, I've experienced it many times. I experienced it sadly, I experience it all the time. And it's like, at the higher you get, like, for me, sadly, like, the louder it gets, you know what I'm saying? Because you just, and I really try to sit with that sometimes, because I have to then tell myself, like, no, I belong here. I'm skilled. I know what I'm doing. I belong. You know, like, it's like constantly, like, reminding yourself of this, because it's almost like I always feel like I'm not doing enough. I think that's a thing, that I haven't done enough, that, you know, I should be at a higher level. Like, it's like a combination of imposter syndrome and like, I should actually be doing this. And it's a really weird thing to try to balance. Like, the imposter syndrome is like getting a thing that you dreamed about, right? And then being like, oh, I'm going to screw this up. Or, you know, is everybody thinking that I shouldn't have gotten this? Somebody would have done this better than me. And then I have to, like, then you just have to, like, talk to yourself and, like, turn that off. You know, it's like, no. Remember, you have to look back at yourself. And, like, remember when you wanted that opportunity? Remember when you were so confident that you could do it? You know, because that's the thing. Confidence is what gets you to where you are. But then sometimes when you finally get there, then the confidence leaves. And it's like, no. All that talk you were talking about, you could do this, was not wrong. You can do it, you know? And then one thing that has helped me is that the higher you also get, the more you realize, oh, everybody is insecure. Everybody's going through this. Everybody's also kind of winging it, right? Everybody's just trying to, like, you know, and what you have is your training and your skill and your experience, right? And that is, nobody can take that away from you. So if you have actually done the work, if you have actually, like, worked on your craft and trained and have experience and believe in your God-given talent, right? The talent that you have inside of you. If you use all of those things, you can trust those things. What happens is you get to a level and then you start not trusting those things. I don't know if I have the right trick, you know? And then there has to be this element, because you realize that most people have this, feel this. It's like, F it, right? Like, I'm going to try it. And you know who does that well? Men. Men do that so well, you know? And not that men don't have their, they do too. But I'm just saying, I'm like, it's like all these, like, I see these CEOs, I'm like, wait a minute, you're just kind of up in here. And like, also, and you're okay being flawed, and you know you're flawed, and you're okay because you also are confident in the parts that you do have a good grasp on. And I feel like that is something that I'm, like, trying to balance. Like, I am flawed. I'm not perfect. There are other people that could do this job just as well, maybe better. But I also have things that are valuable, and I'm smart, and I know that I can have a grasp on this. So I think that those two can exist. And I feel like that understanding of, like, I'm not perfect, but I have good. I have a lot of good can trump that.
I think too, what you touched upon, yes, there is a distinction not only between males and females, but, like, as you get, there's memes about it all the time when you get into leadership calls and you're like, this is what they're talking about in here. Like, and you can laugh about it and have humor, but I say that because I'm really resonating there with you on Broadway. Is like, people are also looking around who are on Broadway and are like, oh my gosh, should I be here? But like, you do have that doubt because confidence leaves you. And I think what's so fascinating is you're charting unknown territory, right? Like, that's when that high performance, and often we think of high performance and elite in the sporting context, but it's applicable, mm-hmm. like you said, whether it's CEO, whether it is on Broadway, whether it's like academic, that's when you have to go, yes, this is unknown territory. but I've done the work. I am smart, I am driven, and I'm surrounded by other people that if I open myself up to actually like connect and ask them for support rather than go at it alone, that's what's going to help you as you do chart the new territory and face that.
I mean, I think one of the things that I have been, that has happened to me in the last, you know, of course, everything, age helps everything. But one thing that I've been okay saying is I don't know. You know, when I was younger, I really thought that I couldn't say that or like, sure, yeah. Like there's times now where I'm like, I actually don't know, but let's try to figure this out. Let me think on it. Let me figure this out. What do you think? What's your opinion on this? Like the, I don't, like being honest when I don't know something is actually, to me now when I'm working with somebody, a sign of intelligence, because everybody knows when you don't know something. So if you're lying about it, it's not helping anything. You're just lying to yourself, you know? But if you can sit there and be like, actually, I don't know right now, you know, that is something that's been such a like a load off, just like being okay. We worked with this amazing woman, Narda, who is also a stage manager, but was our EDI, specialist on stuffs. And we had a circle up at the beginning of our process, and everybody in the circle was like, we had to say tension points that for the process, like things that we thought were gonna, like we knew might be a conflict for us, right, in our circle up. And a lot of the cast were saying their perfectionism, like, I don't want my perfectionism to get in the way. I'm such a perfectionist that I know. And Narda was like, let's get rid of that word and strive for excellence. You know, because there's perfection, it can't be sustained if you make a mistake. There's no room for mistakes. With excellence, you can fail and then keep going and then keep striving. And to me, like that unlocked something, because it was like, yes, I'm like, I'm going to strive for excellence all the time. Like that's where I'm going. Like I want, and you know, and I know, and the thing is, it's like, accepting imposter syndrome is also a problem, because it's because you're so hard on yourself and then you put your heart on everything else. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if you put that to the side and be like, yes, we're all going to work really hard and I'm going to have high expectations for myself, but high expectations for everybody that I work with. And I want us to all have high expectations of ourselves. But then you have that understanding that, and we might fail, and we're not, and we might actually mess this up, but we're going to keep striving for excellence. Like that actually makes it all a little bit more digestible.
It makes it so much more digestible, because suddenly you don't have this yes or no. Was it perfect? Yes or no. And also, especially with art, like the age old saying of art is in the eye, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, yes. Right? Like what is perfect to someone is going to be lacking this. Or for someone else, right? So why are we striving for perfection? Whereas if you strive for excellence and keeping your excellence, like you know in your heart of hearts if it's your excellence. Yeah. And then if other people have other pieces to say, okay, good to know. Thank you.
I mean, but it's so funny you said that, because with choreography and it just depends on where you're working, whether it be like concert dance or you're working in theater, TV and film, you know, it's like you, I always say you have to have your own bar, because, you know, everyone has a different standard or have, like you said, a different opinion of what dance is. Like I know what kind of dance I like, I know what I consider great, you know, and sometimes I've done things and everybody's like, it's great, it's fun. And they're just happy that something got up. You know, I think that sometimes people are just like, we're just happy. We didn't even think we can get this up. We're just happy that this is up. And I can't be satisfied with that. You know, I can't be satisfied with like, I have my own bar that's really high. And that's what I'm striving for. I might not ever get there. I usually don't get there. But I have to set my own bar. And I say that to a lot of people who are making anything. It's like, yeah, because, you know, it's like they say, like, you shouldn't like with criticism. You have to kind of keep it in the middle. Like you can't believe all the hype of like, you're amazing. And the same way you can't believe the hype of people who are talking bad about you, right? So it's like you can't just like only take good criticism. And I'm like, wait a minute. So then what about the? It's like you have to like keep it realistic with feedback, you know. But I'm like, I have my own bar that I'm striving for, and that's actually what keeps me. That's what gets me through a process. Meaning, I'm dealing with outside external criticism. It's like, if I'm happy with the work, if I'm like, feel like I gave it my all, I was striving towards my bar, I did the best that I could, giving these parameters in this situation and this time constraint. If I feel like I genuinely did that, then any criticism is fine. Because I'm like, nobody knows what it took. I know what it took. I know that I did that. I know for me, that was a step. So then I can handle it.
And there too, like that internal bar that you mentioned, a part of it that as I'm like thinking along, it's like, you know, you have to have integrity. That's another word that pairs with that, because you can say externally, I tried my best, but you know, if maybe you didn't, or if your priorities weren't in the right mm-hmm. place and you didn't give things the time and effort that they required. And that's a learning too. Like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. But you have to have integrity and honesty with yourself, not necessarily with other people. Like, that's a great addition. But in order to have that bar that you talk about and to have it so high, you have to also have a lot of integrity and honesty with yourself of, well, am I meeting my own bar? And if I'm not, let's reflect on it.
And why are you not meeting it, right? Do you need to take a break? Do you need to, you know, I always think like, you know, sometimes we take on too much, you know, I've done that, but it's like, did I take on too much and now I can't give my best?
It's diluted. Like, you've diluted what your best could be because you're spreading it too thin. And thank you. I just appreciate that external and internal and taking the good, taking the negative feedback, but knowing for yourself. So thank you. To switch gears again. So I feel like we've got a few different subjects. Just thank you so much. Sort of my last serious question for you is to do with expression. Okay. So as a performer, as a dancer, as a choreographer, like not only do you physically through movement express yourself or the story, whether that be soft or personal, but then through your voice as well, right? Like what we do, we all have a personal brand. We're all out there. If you have a social media, like it's essentially mm-hmm. a mini website. So with all that in mind about expression and standing for something and stuff's just like triangulates everything together here in terms of how important that is of a project that you're working on. Could you share please more about like why you are joining in a part of the Dances for Harris series and what this means for you? What are you expressing?
Yeah, it's super important for me. I think that this election is one of the most important elections in my lifetime. I am participating in this because I believe that Kamala Harris is the right president for this country. I think that she will represent this entire country, especially as a woman, like I said, as a daughter of immigrants, as a Black woman, like it's just so personal for me. I think that I also am somebody who just like values education and research. And one of the scariest things for me in the last couple of years has been the banning of books and the banning of history. And I just like, as somebody who loves history and like, especially world history, I'm like, that is actually devastating. If you look at the wars in the world and propaganda and how it affects people's lives, and the fact that you would deny people an ability to learn history in the way that it happened, not in the way that you wish it would have happened. We all wish things would have happened differently. To not be able to accept your ancestors' shame or pride. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yes, my ancestors did this, but you know, it is a thing. And to be able to separate the two, it's really scary for women to not have autonomy over their body, for the government to be controlling what you can do with your own choice to the point where it's risking your life. And then you have things like gun control, where you're so concerned about women aborting children or women, you know, not You're not allowing women to get the treatment that they need for even pregnancies they weren't trying to abort. But then you are not accessing, you're not allowing of decent and commonsensical gun control so that mass murders don't happen in this country, you know? And I do think that America is an example for the rest of the world. And you can see how our example has influenced the rest of the world. There's a lot of countries that are leaning to more extremism. And right, and granted, there's extremism everywhere and things are happening. Terrible things are happening all over the world that we are not directly associated with. But we can actually, when we have our shit together, we actually influence the rest of the world. So it is, to me, I'm like, it is, I think, on a very personal level, it is important, but I think globally it's also important.
Period. I'll have in the episode link description everything you can access, whether it is like your particular masterclass series that is happening or any of the other Dancers for Harris. But on that, there is just so much you can participate in. And even going back to the very beginning question about SUFs and how sometimes, yes, it's less about the facts and more about the experience. With anything politics, like, yes, there's facts and you need to look into that, but also it's an experience, it's a community, and you're making your own vote, but you're sharing this with your community. So go to a dance class and bond with people. Like, there can be fun and community and culture in it that way as well.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And then my last sign-off question is just to really wrap up how much we know about you. I always ask this, if you had to listen to just one musical artist for the rest of your life, who's it going to be?
Ooh. You know, it would probably be, this is funny. It would be probably like a salt, like Latin music, honestly. Okay, let me see. In English, who can I listen to for all the time? Who is one? Whitney Houston. Whitney Houston, I could listen to for the rest of my life. And then in Latin music, I probably could listen to, like, there's an old band that I grew up in. Not a band. It was a group called Fania All-Stars. I could listen to them for my whole life. Celia Cruz is part of that. Or, like, Marc Anthony, because my parents love that. Like, I think it'd be something that feels like myself, like, home, my family. If, like, that's, it would be, like, I listen to it and I remember, like, my house, like, where I grew up. Like, it'd be that.
There's the heart, there's the feel. That's the thread line through this. I was like, how do you feel? What is it giving you? Just,
yeah, it has to be things that are like nostalgic.
Exactly. Thank you so much. I can't quite emphasize how impactful and powerful this conversation is.
Oh,
and
thank you.
Just everything you're doing. I cannot wait to follow along. And thank you. I'm going to ramble, so I'll end it here. But just thank you for your time.
Thank you for what you're doing. This is awesome. This is a great interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Tall Poppy Talk. We'll see you next time. Feel free to check us out on socials, YouTube, and the website. Thanks for today's guest. And we'll